The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now. Here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Buenos dias, mi amigos. It is Wednesday, Cinco de Mayo, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to our next 60 minutes of news talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Coming to you live and direct from Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo. It's a way of life. And the beautiful, newly redesigned Rolla J Studios. Oh, I got to give you the overhead shot for this. Look at all this fine equipment we're working with. The 24-channel Mackie board. We got Skype over here on the little Acer notebook. All sorts of compression and headphones and special effects going on. And running it all to my left, my good friend, the maestro, Ganja John. We're going to have to bring you up a little bit, Ganja John, there. There we go.
Hey, everybody. How you guys doing today?
John's got a new toy.
I do have a new toy. That's true.
While you're on cam, you got to show him.
Yeah, I'll bring it up, guys. The new Rolla J Studios toy we have here.
The iPad. Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Logo. But I've been playing with it since 9 o'clock this morning when it was delivered to my front door.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I can't get enough of it.
And also coming to us in our virtual studios in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Carrie.
Oh, we keep dropping the call for some reason.
Oh, we don't have Carrie.
We'll try and get Carrie back here on the line. The call dropped again for some odd reason. Ah, new technology is always fun. Well, coming up on today's show, right after the first break, we're going to get Carrie on the line for our hemp headlines, we hope. And then Irie Wednesday, we speak to Johnny Reeferseed out there in Iowa. He's got a great tune coming up for us. Carrie is on the line now, so let's bring Carrie back in. Carrie, welcome back. Okay, we're still not hearing Carrie. Oh, this was working in rehearsal.
Of course it was.
All right, we'll fix that during the break. We'll be right back with that. And also today we've got our Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You can ask your questions live in our chat room, and we'll get those questions answered for you from one of the leading experts in marijuana research. And at the end of the show, some more on the Mexican drug war and the finish up of my rant against the reefer madness in Florida. All that on Normal Show Live today. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and THCF has clinics in 10 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Michigan, New Mexico, and Rhode Island. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or call 1-800-723-0188.
Which of you are ready to admit to having used marijuana in the past? And they want us to go around and ask each of you. Senator Kerry? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Senator Edwards?
Yes.
Senator Lieber?
Well, you know, I have a reputation for giving unpopular answers at Democratic debates. I never use marijuana. Sorry.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Senator.
Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine. Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
Yes, that was former President Bill Clinton. His comments about not inhaling might have been doublespeak, as in, I did not have sex with that woman. Well, not technically. Christopher Hitchens, noted writer-journalist whose career has spanned four decades, is putting out a memoir of his remarkable career. Details of the book that is not out yet have leaked to the press, and a chapter is devoted to his college years at Oxford. Also at Oxford at the same time as Hitchens was former President Bill Clinton, who was attending on a Rhodes Scholarship. The president, who famously said he didn't inhale and never tried inhaling again while campaigning for the presidency in 1992, explained that his experimentation with marijuana happened while he was attending the prestigious school. Hitchens confirms in his book that Clinton did not, as he stated, inhale, but rather loved to consume brownies cooked with cannabis. A line that is leaked from the memoir is, quote, "He preferred, like many other marijuana enthusiasts, to take his dope in the form of large handfuls of cookies and brownies," Hitchin writes. No comment from former President Bill Clinton yet. The memoir titled Hitch 22 will hit bookstores early next month.
So I didn't inhale, I ingested, I guess is the way we need to phrase that now, like the old marijuana brownies. Well, you know, it's perfect for the former president. You know, he's a big fan of fast food and junk food. You know, you think that would be kind of a natural fit?
And, you know, I think the actual question was, did you ever smoke marijuana? And I guess, you know, if he didn't inhale, he was telling the truth.
He was telling the truth. That's, you know, it's like, what is the definition of is? Thanks for the story, Kerry.
In the drama-filled epic of the Los Angeles medical marijuana dispensaries, the city has decided to take a tough approach to the numerous collectives currently operating in the second largest city in the U.S. Los Angeles City prosecutors sent out letters to 439 medical marijuana dispensaries warning them that they must be shut down by June 7th, the date that an ordinance to regulate them will finally take effect after years of contentious debate. City Attorney Steve Cooley had publicly declared that all dispensaries were illegal and has vowed to close them, putting pressure on the city council to pass strict laws that would punish those already in business. Frank Magellan, a spokesman for the city attorney's office, said the police department and city building inspectors compiled a list of what they say are illegal dispensaries, continuing, quote, "We're not saying we have them all," he said. "This is the initial blanketing of locations that we are aware of at this time." Under the new ordinance that was passed earlier this year, dispensaries that are registered with the clerk back in 2007, when the city council had adopted a moratorium on any new stores, will be allowed to stay open, providing that they are still in business and still at the same location. City officials have estimated that about 130 of the original 186 registered dispensaries are still operating. In the last 3 years since the moratorium has passed but not enforced, hundreds of dispensaries have come into play, complicating the process of trying to limit them by ordinance. The letters that were dated May 4th were sent to operators and property owners and warned that violations of the new ordinance is a misdemeanor and could lead to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Any collectives that stay open in violation of the ordinance past June 7th could face an additional penalty of $2,500 per day. According to Greenberg, an assistant city attorney who was one of the signatures of the letter, said the dispensaries that do not shut down will face criminal and civil enforcement actions as soon as the police verify that they are still selling marijuana. Now, three lawsuits have been filed that challenge the city's ordinance and seek injunctions to prevent its enforcement. And, of course, we'll be following their progress on those lawsuits here on the Stash, and we'll bring you information as it comes in.
Yeah, these regulations, you know, I'm for the regulation of businesses in general, right? I don't think it should just be laissez-faire, anything goes, you know, what the market will bear, because, you know, we've seen the effects of that kind of capitalism. But I think the regulations need to be reasonable. And it seems to me that Los Angeles has been going about this with, you know, by pursuing the ends that they want rather than, you know, adjusting their regulations for the realities, right? What they want is less dispensaries. They want 70 or whatever. They want to shut as many of them down as possible. And so they want this particular number that they pick out of a hat somewhere that should be enough for all of the patients in the Los Angeles basin. So to get to that number, they come up with these regulations that can whittle it down to the number that they want. The problem with that is it pays no attention to the realities of the dispensary industry or the medical marijuana that people need. The reason there are so many dispensaries in Los Angeles is because there are so many people that need and want cannabis. And when you shut down all those dispensaries, it's not like they're going to go, eh, all right, I'm done. I don't need cannabis anymore. No, they're going to continue to need and want their cannabis, and someone's going to continue to supply it to them. Some may be the dispensaries that continue to exist, which have an even larger hold on the market now, thanks to these regulations. But a lot will be people that just go back to the black market, just go back to the park, just go back to the high school hallways to get their medicine. So come up with reasonable regulations that everyone can agree with, and have the people in the industry be a part of crafting these regulations. Now, I don't think it should be anything like, you know, what we saw in, you know, various administrations, both Republican and Democrat, where you put the actual people in charge of the industries in charge of their own watchdog groups. No, I don't want that. But there got to be some sort of input by the people that are actually involved in the business and the people who are the actual customers of the business. And Los Angeles has not done either of those things.
It has been a long, strange ride for medical marijuana at our nation's capital. The District of Columbia originally passed medical marijuana legislation back in 1998, but Congress had prohibited the implementation of the bill by withholding funding for a program for nearly 12 years. In December, Congress included it in the 2010 budget. The original bill was passed in 1998 with 69% of the voters, the most decisive medical marijuana vote to date. The original bill would have allowed for caregivers not formally specified, home grows, no limits on amounts, and liberal nonprofit status for dispensaries. Well, since January, lawmakers have been busy adding amendments to the bill to update it, something that has sparked debate among both sides. As lawmakers were debating the bill, many opponents gave the "we don't want California" reasoning to why the bill had to be refined before implementation. Surprisingly, those that came out against the bill as is was its original co-sponsor, Wayne Turner, who argued that the city council members needed to head off the abuses that were emerging on the West Coast and urged them to make it as strict as possible as not to provoke any congressional interference, as D.C. is overseen by Congress. Dan Riefel, a legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project, called a few amendments something that was, quote, needed to create a medical marijuana program that reflects the will of the district voters. By adding these proposed amendments, the district would implement one of the best medical marijuana laws in the country, balancing the needs of patients with the safeguards necessary to prevent abuse. Many advocates are crying foul over the non-cultivation amendment that was added toward the last few weeks of the debate. Under the new and improved law, 8 licensed dispensaries will be open later this year that can collect the medical marijuana from licensed growers that live in D.C. and are allowed to grow up to 95 plants each at indoor facilities. Patients will not be allowed to grow medicine for themselves and are limited to purchasing up to 2 ounces a month. Activists, including the executive director for Americans for Safer Access, were busy yesterday morning lobbying council members before the historic vote, urging them that the 2-ounce possession limit and the growing restrictions were too low for the law to be effective. They also wanted a provision added to the bill that would prohibit patients from being fired for testing positive for medical marijuana, and also from for-profit companies bidding on the dispensary licenses. Specifically, most advocates were calling for the self-cultivation provision to ease the strain on the new dispensaries. No last-minute concessions were added, and the measure passed unanimously with all the new restrictions in place added to the long-awaited medical marijuana law. D.C. Mayor Adrian Fenty is expected to sign the bill soon, which will then go into the hands of Congress and the White House. They will have 30 days to decide if the legalization of medical marijuana can be approved in the city.
Okay, so first of all, it's good that we're going to get medical marijuana in the nation's capital. What's bad here, of course, are all these amendments. First of all, at Normal, we are always opposed to these ideas that we need to take away the patient's right to grow. We feel it's a very, very important touchstone in all medical marijuana is to give the patients the right to take care of themselves. That is the beauty of medical marijuana, is that it is a houseplant. People can care for themselves without having to deal with any sort of intermediaries getting rich along the way. This notion that we're going to have dispensaries to head off abuses, as Wayne Turner said, or as MPP's Dan Riffle said, the best medical marijuana program as that it will prevent abuses. What are these abuses that they're talking about? Well, the abuse they're talking about is the idea that some people who aren't really, really desperately sick and dying, visibly, you know, hurting and suffering, are going to use marijuana. The abuse that they fear is that people who want to smoke marijuana for their own personal purposes might be doing so under the guise of medical use. It's once again this casting of marijuana users as some sort of evil degenerates preying on society, these lepers of society that are to be opposed at all possible costs, even if it means that we have to restrict these medical marijuana programs to the point where only the most frail, sick and dying people can get on these programs. The will of the people, on that ballot measure was a ballot measure that passed with 69% of the voters of the District of Columbia. And when it was originally written, it was written more liberally than California's Prop 215. So you cannot convince me that it's the will of the people to take away the people's right to grow. No, that's the will of Congress, that's the will of the D.C. City Council, and that's the will of some people in the marijuana movement who think that if you're not using medically, somehow you're abusing marijuana. And I will not stand for that anymore. I am not abusing marijuana. If I'm sharing a joint with Ganja John here, we are not a patient and a criminal. We're two human beings sharing a joint. Neither one of us is criminal for our choice of using marijuana. And it just so that my particular reason for wanting to use it might not fit some sort of medically verifiable list is no reason to deny me the right to use it. Now, getting back to this, this medical marijuana, 2 ounces a month. That's the other thing I wanted to get to. I keep going on, and I've been saying this speech in various forms throughout the festival season, that medical marijuana is not good enough. And right now, what we have with medical marijuana is as good as it gets. It's getting worse state by state. We started with California with a pretty open law. You can grow a whole lot. 8 ounces is a floor, not a ceiling. We have Oregon and Washington with 24-ounce limits. Then we have Michigan and New Mexico getting down to 16 and 12-ounce limits. And then we have some states that are in 8-ounce limits, 6-ounce limits, 3-ounce limits, 2.5 ounces, 2 ounces, even 1-ounce limits being proposed for these patients. When is the last time you heard of anyone proposing some sort of limit for how many aspirin someone can take, or better yet, a limit on how much Oxycontin or Percocet that a doctor can prescribe for a patient who might need it? This is up to doctors and patients. You can't just say, well, you know, an ounce, that ought to work for everyone. Come on now. An ounce might work for some, but an ounce is going to be used daily or weekly or even daily by some of the patients that I know, some of the patients who can't inhale cannabis, can't use a vaporizer, so they have to bake it in brownies or whatever, and that takes a whole lot more medicine than if you're using it, you know, inhaling or vaporizing the medicine. I just get so worked up about these bills, and they just they make me so angry sometimes. John, you have something?
Yeah, and you know, I deal with this every day because this is a law changing how I'm treated medically. And you know, Congress decided a long time ago that 4 hours of dialysis 3 times a week was good for everyone.
Yeah.
And And, you know, and until you just said that, I never really put those together. But that's lawmakers deciding how I'm going to be treated medically?
Yeah.
That's BS.
That's right. That's this. It's this notion that we all have to fit in some predetermined mold, that there's a certain dosage and a certain amount. And, again, marijuana doesn't work that way. The beauty of it is that you can control it yourself. As you're using it, if you need a gram, that's great. If you need an ounce, that's great. You can tell how much you need as you're using the cannabis. Kerry, thanks again for the headlines. And when we come back, we will get right to our Irie Wednesday music, because it's just about time to take a break. Oh, yeah. Okay, got to go back to my happy place. Got a little ranty there for a second. All smiles and fun here at Normal Show Live. We're right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would say to South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML. Or visit their website at norml.org.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha, ya no puede caminar.
You're listening to Normal Show Live.
Porque le falta marihuana que fumar.
You chimpin'.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reeferseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Okay, every Wednesday we get to go all the way out to Iowa and visit with Johnny Reeferseed. Johnny, are you there?
I am here.
Fantastic, my man. How are everything going out there in the great Midwest?
I'm great. Just this last Saturday we had our, you know, our annual Global Marijuana March, and great attendance, you know, almost 300 people, which is great for Des Moines.
Wow.
Every year we just keep getting more and more people out, and so that was great to see.
Oh, I love going out to those marches and seeing that there's other people that, you know, believe like you believe. It's always empowering to get that feeling. Glad to hear it. Now, tell us, what do we got for today's song for our Irie Wednesday?
Today, it's a guy named David Curtin coming to us from sunny Barbados. Don't let his long golden dreadlock fool you. David Curtin's sound and aura is far from a typical reggae artist. His music is a unique hybrid of rock, pop, and reggae that moves past the reverent Caribbean rhythms of the past and onto the airwaves, dance floors, and digital devices of the future. His music touches the heart, head, and feet, making you feel, think, and dance. The press and industry discovered Curtin long before his mainstream bid. His press kit is one accolade after another. He has played South by Southwest, won 3 Barbados Music Awards.
Flowers, aren't you?
Sorry, I think Carrie doesn't realize we can hear
her. Okay. He has won 3 Barbados Music Awards in 08, including Song, Video, and Reggae Artist of the Year, and performed on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Today's Irie Wednesday Toker Tune, Green Camouflage, David's Time for Change CD, comes to us from Token Tam at the Marijuana Music Awards. You can learn more about David Curtin at www.davidcurtin.com. That's DavidKirton.com, and he's also on MySpace, myspace.com/DavidCurtinMusic. And if you like him enough, you can buy his tunes off of iTunes. So fire it up, Russ.
You say that's Curtin, K-I-R-T-O-N?
K-I-R-T-O-N.
And what's the name of the tune?
Green Camouflage.
All right, Green Camouflage.
Green Camouflage. Yeah.
Sounds good to me. All right, let's get some green camo on. This is David Curtin.
Taking out the innocent and the guilty. They no longer need to blend into the trees. They're hiding in the street, oh my God. Tryna desensitize me on the TV with their vision of brutality. But trying to shallow my conscience with defensive statements. Oh, no, camouflage, they say no. Camouflage, they say no. No camouflage, no camouflage, no camouflage. Give me the green camouflage for my peace march. Oy. Green camouflage, we'll be on arm. How you mean illegal? Give me the green camouflage for my peace march. We're a peaceful people. Green camouflage, we'll be on arm. Hey. Camouflage in a fashion. The war was over for America. Oh, I tell them they don't need the green no more. Searching for the enemy door to door. I will make camouflage in Jamaica. Make me feel like a soldier in your army. In Barbados, most peaceful people I know. Still come open embargo. No, camouflage say no. Camouflage say no. Camouflage. No camouflage, wow. Give me the green camouflage for my peace march. Oh yeah, green camouflage, we'll be on arm. How can I share me illegal? Give me the green camouflage for my peace march. How come green camouflage so illegal? Flash.
Give me the green.
Camo, camo, camo.
Give me the green.
Camouflage. No pants, no shirt, no dress, no skirt, no shoe, no sock, no bag, no rag.
Give me the green.
Camo, camo, camo.
Give me the green.
with some Green Camouflage here on your Daily Toker Tunes. This song will be available for download. Just go up to our blog at stash.normal.org. It should be up there by 3 p.m. Thanks a lot to Johnny Reed for Seed for
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of Cannabis Science.
All right, every Wednesday we visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for our dose of cannabis science, and I always kind of liken it to the home run derby at the All-Star game for baseball. We lob some pitches over the plate, and Dr. Mitch just knocks them right out of the park. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
With a description like that, how could I not love it?
Oh, yeah. And we threw you some curveballs last week, though. We gave you a whole lot of questions. It's become real popular here in Oregon. This cannabis salve, people making a cannabinoid-based lotion or a salve that they can put on wounds or to take care of joint pain and things like that. And we threw a whole bunch of questions at you, and it was like, wow, I didn't realize there was so much about salves. And you've gone and done some homework and come back with some answers. For us. So let's get to that before we start taking questions from the chat room.
Yeah, I'm delighted to, you know, just do this, and I appreciate everybody's patience on this one. I had some ideas before last week, but I just wanted to double check some of this literature. The clincher here is the salve recipe you sent me, and the one that seems to be the most popular involves using an important fat so that the cannabis has the opportunity to essentially dissolve in this fat. But that without that step, clearly none of these would work. So any of the salves that don't have, say, the vitamin E oil that you mentioned in your recipe or this coconut oil that is clearly a clincher, those are not going to have the same opportunity to go across the skin. The other thing I wanted to mention is a couple of folks emailed me about salves that are made with tinctures. And if you have both a tincture and a fat, it looks like the opportunities for transporting across the skin are absolutely at their peak. I got some neat input from cannabis physicians and pharmacologists across the world on this as well, that with inflamed skin or skin that has wounds, which was a point people had made last week, there definitely is an opportunity for that transport, but the chance of testing positive on a drug test remains. So this THC will be absorbed. It will also show up in a urine screen.
Okay. Well, that's good news and bad news both. So glad to hear of all of that. And again, that recipe for the salve, I've got it posted now up on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. It's Gina Goodwin's recipe. So if you just Google Gina, J-E-A-N-A, Goodwin, G-O-O-D-W-I-N, you'll probably find it.
And I just had a chance to look at her new book, actually, her new cookbook. And some of her recipes are great. My wife took that class, so you locals, if you can't take that class.
Yeah, the information for that will be up at the Oregon Normal website at ornorml.org. Now we'll go to our chat room here and get some questions. And remember, your questions don't necessarily have to be about medical marijuana. We also discuss the culture of marijuana, the science, the history of marijuana. All topics involving cannabis are open for discussion. Real simple question coming here, six-word question out of the chat room. Why does weed make you hungry?
The bottom line, it looks like this works all the way up and down the phylogenetic spectrum. So even the old protozoan, the hydra, has a little receptor that responds to cannabinoids and starts it throwing things towards its little paramecium-type mouth. This is something that we've been hardwired for. So the cannabinoid receptor, when it's fired, we get an increase in hunger. It looks like it's an important part of the satiety system as well, so that once we're full, the cannabinoid system fires in a different kind of way. And this is really something that's evolved over the years to make sure we go out and track the good, yummy, nutritious things we need in life to keep us alive and help us spread our genes around.
Okay. Another nice short question here coming from the chat room. Can cannabis hurt a fetus?
As it turns out, the data we have on humans just aren't very trustworthy. We've got great evidence from Marilyn Mathery's studies done in the Caribbean that suggests that there's little impact on the fetus in women who sort of are approved for using cannabis down in that area. But we do have a kind of haunting study done in the United States where folks whose moms used cannabis during pregnancy at age 10 were more likely to have attention deficit problems and things along those lines. Human fetuses are incredibly robust, but, you know, a pregnant fetus's nervous system is still developing, so this is something we want to avoid. Unfortunately, the animal literature uses doses that are just so extreme that, of course, there's an impact, but it's, you know, beyond smoking 8 joints a day. Mm. Take-home message, anything you can do to enhance your health during pregnancy is important. Smoking cannabis to, say, relieve nausea or things like that may not be your first line of defense. There's probably another way of going about that would be better.
Yeah, and even disregarding the possible health effects, the possible criminal justice effects, we have numerous stories of people that have lost their children and been taken away by Child Protective Services because of the illegality of the cannabis. So keep that in mind as well, folks, when you're considering that. let's see here. I have a question from Keel Hall. And he wants to know about the effects of AVID, and I assume that's some sort of a miticide or something, AVID on humans, something that these cultivators might use.
And the bottom line on these, and I've talked to Danny Denko about this too, is just this is not the treatment of choice on this kind of thing. And another problem with our unregulated, untaxed market, there are definitely better ways of keeping some of the insects and things like that off of your cannabis plants. And the clincher may be, you know, focusing on growing fewer plants and being more vigilant about chasing things out yourselves. There are a number of spiders and bugs that you can actually use that will eat these other bugs and won't cause a lot of trouble for you. And it seems like that naturalistic approach is probably preferred to some of these chemical ones.
Great question here, and especially considering the demographics of marijuana lately. We've been seeing people in their retirement years, a great increase in them using cannabis. So this person's asking, does cannabis have any added benefits for senior citizens, and how can I talk my grandma into trying pot?
Well, all she has to do is hook up with my dad. No. The clincher here seems to be dependent upon an individual's needs. So the sexual enhancement is always a big plus for folks, although not something you might want to chat about with your own grandma.
Yeah.
The improved appetite is definitely a consistent effect. And what we're finding in folks who are not, you know, starting as youngsters but actually turn to it later in life is some of this free-floating, what I'd call anhedonia, an inability to experience pleasure that seems to haunt a number of aged folks, seems to respond well to cannabis. And then the quality of sleep. So it's curious how sleep starts to get interrupted or impaired in older folks in ways where the occasional use of cannabis might be a good way of sort of teaching yourself to fall back to sleep at a reasonable hour and to stay asleep for a reasonable duration. All of these things are delightful, but number one, and first and foremost, there's an incredible impact on mood. And I think a lot of older folks, particularly if you start at small doses, find that that's the thing that's most appealing to them.
You know, our folks in the chat room here are now proposing a new reality show, Dr. Mitch, the Love Doctor. So senior hookups with Dr. Mitch.
Run right after Dr. Drew on VH1.
There we go. All right, let's get to another question here. Kane Chicago wants to know, does a person's body fat content affect the rate at which a person's body will detox THC and cannabinoids for a drug test?
Sad but true. THC is stored in fat cells, and obviously the fewer of those you have, the fewer of them you have to empty out. Let it be an argument for us all to then keep our munchies high in protein and low in fat should the dreaded drug test loom.
The follow-up on this was, what techniques can help with the detox process?
Unfortunately, the only thing that is documented is time and water. All of you know, I've been carrying this 2-liter bottle of water around every morning, and it's stunning how efficiently this has worked, but you really do need the time. You need tons of water, and the other thing is you can't sneak a little baby hit now and again. It just doesn't work that way. This is a metabolite that really stays in the system a long time. It's unfortunate that, I mean, I have acquaintances who can drop a quarter hit of acid and go to a drug test, but folks couldn't take a puff off a joint and do the same.
So, Dr. Mitch, would my dialysis treatments actually quicken that process at all?
As odd as it sounds, that should work in that you're essentially getting rid of certain things in your system that you need to get rid of anyway. Unfortunately, it's not a one-time deal, and I certainly don't recognize trying the home dialysis just to pass a drug test.
Yeah, don't do dialysis to pass a drug test, guys. I'll tell you right now, it's not as fun as not passing a drug test.
Yeah, it's not something you want to get involved with if you can avoid it. All right, here we go, right, you know, outside of the whole medical and scientific here, with Mr. Spoff, a question. Which green energy type, hemp, solar, wind, etc., do you feel the U.S. government should be spending the most effort on? That is, should we direct more energy toward hemp or toward solar or toward wind?
I have friends who are pretty immersed in this literature who are big fans of wind right now. Some of the biofuels are turning out to be not as efficient as we had originally hoped. So as much as I love hemp for that use and a whole lot of other uses, it may not be as efficient as what we're actually getting from wind, particularly in areas where it really pays off. Those of you who are lucky enough to live in Oregon or across the California coast there are big areas where putting up literally one of those windmills could make a big difference in the long run for everybody around there. And I think that that's a neat thing to investigate for the United States and the world over.
Oh, yeah. When we have the drive outside of Portland area, and once we hit the gorge, there's, you know, just this whole ridges of these big, beautiful towers with the windmills on them. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've been knocked off my feet in that area. So, I mean, you know, it's an excellent place to gather wind.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of wind there. Okay, let's see. We've got a question from OC Normal wanting to know, how accurate are the hair tests for detecting cannabis?
The curious thing about that is where they draw the cutoff line for what they're going to call a positive. And it's unfortunate, but the hair test can go way, way back, of course, depending on how long your hair is. The sad part is you can't just shave your head and hope they won't take any, because they'll grab hair off anywhere they can get. And I know, Russ, you've got a scary story about that kind of thing. But the clincher is if they draw the what would essentially be the equivalent of a 90 nanogram per milliliter urine test, if they draw the line there, they end up getting relatively few false positives. They do get more false negatives. But I'm discovering that some of these Fortune 500 companies that are using it are actually drawing it near what's the equivalent of the 50 nanogram mark, and boy, that's a rough haul, even if you had just a joint a month ago.
Yeah. And of course, we know that detection times vary, you know, from person to person, even from month to month. Someone who smokes X amount in May might test okay in June, but smoke the same X amount in July, they might not test okay in August. It's strange how the body eliminates THC. It's not in a linear fashion. And I always point out to people that all of the other drugs, your body wants to get rid of them as fast as it can. But for some reason, it wants to hold on to cannabis. Isn't that interesting?
Sad but true. The other drawback of this is that if your hair happens to be dark and curly, it's more likely to hold on to these metabolites, and I'm afraid that puts a lot of us at a real disadvantage.
Yeah, people with Mediterranean or, you know, African-American hair, yeah, definitely kind of discriminatory that way. Okay, let's get to more. Also wanted a clarification here. Mr. Logical wants a clarification on that coconut oil and the salve. The coconut oil would be a good ingredient because of the fat content?
Exactly, and that's one of those fats that, you know, you might not want to eat the way it works, but it definitely is superb for making a salve because of all the hydrocarbons essentially present in it.
Okay. All right. We've got time for maybe two more questions here. Keel Hall has a question, kind of a chemistry botany question. He mentions that the Delta-9 THC is produced in the trichome. So what about the other cannabinoids, the CBDs and all these other things? Where do they come from specifically in the plant?
At least for cannabidiol and some of the ones with the names that are even harder to pronounce, those are also in that same gland on the plant. So that's a pretty reasonable spot for looking for all of those. They're markedly less present in the root and in the stem, just like with THC.
Okay. And to wrap things up here, a question from Enly10. And by the way, if we didn't get your question on the air, you can always send them by email to 420research@gmail.com, and we'll either bring it up on the show or Dr. Mitchell answer you directly. But our final question for the day from Enly10 asks, can you consume a large amount of cannabis right before you fall asleep, get a solid 8 or so hours of sleep, and wake up still high?
Not only can you, a lot of people do it pretty often. As it turns out, THC metabolism slows during sleep, just like your metabolism of other things slows during sleep. So that would be at least a chance to essentially avoid the wake and bake by having baked the night before. I don't recommend this because over time it's going to interfere with some of your stage 4 and some of your REM sleep, but it's definitely something that, you know, if people claim it and you don't believe them, trust me, if the dose was high enough, it really could have happened.
Reminds me of that potluck song, "We don't get high, we stay high." Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Mitch, again for joining us here on our Cannabis Science every Wednesday. And again, the email address, 420research@gmail.com. And good luck on all your testing.
Thanks so much. Looking forward to next week. Take care.
All right. And we'll be right back after these messages. We'll this is Normal Show Live.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com. or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everybody. 50 after the hour, and not so much rant, but just, you know, musings and thinking about things today. And I did want to make the announcement that today is our 500th episode of this show. 500 shows, John.
I'm pretty excited about
it. Yeah, and what I like about it is that number 500 hits on 5-5-2010.
It's a base 10 system.
Numerologically speaking, you can't get much better than that.
No, you can't.
But I did want to make a mention here on Cinco de Mayo about our neighbors to the south in Mexico. And, you know, we've got 20 to 23,000 people. You know, every time I go back to get the stat, it's gone up by a couple thousand. But somewhere around 22,000-23,000 people who have been murdered, killed in Mexico over the stupid war on drugs. And again, we find that 70% of all of the profits that are going to these Mexican drug organizations are based on marijuana trafficking and sales and cultivation. Marijuana that we would be very, very glad to grow for ourselves here, but our laws do not let us. The Obama administration has recommitted to the Merida Initiative. This is the initiative to supply Mexico with more guns and helicopters and, you know, advisors and money to try to stamp out the Mexican drug trafficking organizations. We had Michelle Leonhardt, who's Obama's new head of DEA, back when she was deputy head of DEA, talking about the violence in Mexico and saying that that's a good thing. It's a sign that we're being effective, that we're finally clamping down on these guys and they're acting out violently. Well, not a very good thing if you're one of the families of the 22,000 who have been beheaded, whose bodies have been strewn about on the streets. They even had a guy there in Mexico, one of these drug barons who's went by the name of El Pozole, the soup maker, because when he would take his enemies and take them alive and dip them into big old 55-gallon drums of acid. Okay? In Juarez, Mexico right now, across the border from El Paso, we have got 7,000 murders, murder every 7 seconds, excuse me, a murder every seven. No, I'm sorry. I'm getting the lines wrong here. 7 murders a day. Thank you. Sorry. So many stats in my head, I can't keep track of them all. 7 murders a day that they get there in Juarez, Mexico. The violence continues. People are terrified to go out in their own cities. Mexico is quickly becoming a failed state, all because we won't let ourselves here in America grow the marijuana that we obviously want. So that was what I wanted to say about Cinco de Mayo today, that while you're, you know, having that margarita or celebrating at some Mexican restaurant somewhere, remember that Mexicans are dying over this. Mexicans are dying over this market, and it's up to us to get out here and change the laws. It's up to us to convince all of our fellow citizens here in America that changing the laws to allow for the adult personal consumption of cannabis is a good thing. That even if they don't smoke pot themselves, even if they hate pot, if they hate potheads, even if they feel all of that animosity toward us, we've got to convince them it's in their best interest to legalize. And no, there's no better way to do it than to show them the war that's happening on our doorstep right now, all because we refuse to make the sensible move of regulating the third most popular substance in America. We're trying out here on the West Coast. We got the Tax Control and Regulate Control and Tax Act of 2010 in California. It's made the ballot. We'll be voting on that. In Oregon, OCTA is trying to make the ballot. In Washington, I-1068 is trying to make the ballot. The whole West Coast is making a step forward here towards sensible regulation of cannabis. And we need to convince the rest of America that it's time to do it in their own best interest. It does not help us to have a failed state on our southern border controlled by narco-terrorists. And speaking of terrorists, if you can design a system that can get bales, tons and bales of marijuana through the American border, you can use that same system to get explosives, bombs, people, anything you want across the American border. right? So what we're doing through this war on marijuana is that we are enriching criminals. We are enriching criminal organizations and allowing them to build a trafficking network that could easily be used by terrorists to do something nefarious here in America. So once again, let's take care of it here on our side of the border. Let's legalize for all people so that we can have some sensible regulations here. All right, let me get back to another thing I wanted to talk about, too. This was, we had talked yesterday about this Governor Charlie Crist in Florida, and his spokesperson, which was Bruce Grant, he's the director of the Florida Office of Drug Control, he had all sorts of things to say. One of our normal chapters, Normal of South Florida, wrote into him to ask him to reform, you know, to support reforming marijuana laws, and he wrote back with a whole bunch of reefer madness, so much so I was only able to get through three paragraphs of it yesterday on the show. So I wanted to end the show with a little bit more reefer madness because now we've got the effect ready to go. So here we go. A little bit more reefer madness from Florida Office of Drug Control, Bruce D. Grant.
I am very concerned about the health and well-being of Florida citizens. Any policy change that results in an increase of marijuana use, particularly among youth, is unacceptable. Cannabis use has acute effects on attention and memory, something that constitutes a particular problem for adolescents still in school and perhaps contemplating it for a collegiate future. Furthermore, marijuana use impairs judgment and motor skills, posing a serious risk of automobile accidents. It is also estimated that about 10% of marijuana users eventually become dependent on it. By enforcing policies that eventually that suppress the use of addictive drugs like marijuana, we are affirming our ultimate respect for freedom and liberty by ensuring that fewer Americans get trapped in a life of addiction.
Well, okay, let's deconstruct some of this. Cannabis use has effects on attention and memory. When you're high. When you're high, it's harder to concentrate and it's harder to remember things. When you're not high, no deficits, no cognitive declines. I've got study after study to prove it. Marijuana impairs judgment and motor skills, posing a serious risk of automobile accidents. I can show you study after study that shows highly impaired marijuana users with extreme amounts in their system, test better on roadside sobriety tests than drivers at a 0.05 blood alcohol level, right? People who would be considered okay to drive if they passed the test. This notion that it's estimated 10% of users become dependent on it, you realize 15% of alcohol users become dependent and 32% of tobacco users become dependent. So why is that not an argument for making those two substances illegal again in the case of alcohol? And besides, this dependence that he speaks about is characterized as short-lived and mild, including some things like insomnia, irritability, and a slight craving for marijuana. It's nothing like the dependence one would have on alcohol, tobacco, heroin, cocaine, or even caffeine for that matter. And furthermore, enforcing policies that suppress the use of addictive drugs? Have you checked the stats on how many people are using marijuana? You're not suppressing anything. 20 years ago, there were 50 million marijuana smokers. Now there are 102 million people who have tried marijuana in their lifetime. So please, Director Grant, don't give me this notion that what we're doing now is working in any sort of way. It's time to change. One more bit of reefer madness here as we wind up.
Finally, please be aware that federal and Florida laws prohibit, quote, medical marijuana, because an expert review of the evidence conducted by the Institute of Medicine concluded that, quote, smoked marijuana is a crude THC delivery system that also delivers harmful substances and cannot be expected to provide a precisely defined drug effect. For those reasons, there is little future in smoked marijuana as a medically approved medication, end quote. Safer and scientifically proven drugs exist for all of the medical conditions that marijuana is erroneously thought to treat.
Well, here's a little note for you. That report that you're talking about is from the 1999 Institute of Medicine. The latest from the American Medical Association, the doctors who actually know something about this, in 2009 actually support the medical use of marijuana. The American Medical Association said, quote, smoked cannabis is an effective relief and therapy for the symptoms of multiple sclerosis, for neuropathic pain, and other conditions. Smoked cannabis. So if you want to rely on a study from 1999, go right ahead. We're going to step into the 21st century where medical marijuana has already been realized to be effective, safe, and useful for so many people. Our Medical Rest, have yourself a great Cinco de Mayo for Ganja John and everyone here at Normal Show Live. Thanks for joining us. Replays will be on at 3, 5, 7, and 9 o'clock. You'll also be able to download from our blog, the Stash blog, at stash.normal.org. The podcast should be up there by 3 p.m. Pacific time. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.